Look, I got a 1 o'clock. So, why don't we wrap this up?
No, so they won't try to go quicker and move along and get it done.
Because, well, maybe. Okay. I mean, if they're truly bad, maybe there is, you know, cues.
Every boss has gone through it. There's been managers that have done the interviews and, like, they're killing time at the end.
Would you like a tour? Here is the break room. We get free coffee.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. In for Vince Petrano, here's Eric Bilstad.
Vince is taking a couple of days off. Michelle Richards is here. In Whitefish Bay, there's a border path between Buckley Park and Big Bay Park that is cordoned off right now because of a sinkhole. Sinkhole in this area formed on Sunday over the weekend due to a deep storm sewer that failed, says the village. So now comes the effort of repairing said sinkhole and then also ensuring that we're good elsewhere. Joining us now on the Tri-County Contracting Hotline on Wisconsin's Morning News is Matthew Collins. He is the Whitefish Bay DPW Director. Hi, Matt.
Good morning, Eric.
So how deep is this sinkhole?
So the sinkhole itself, we approximate it as 30 feet deep, and it's around a 15 or 20 foot by 20 foot area. So it's fairly measurable.
And you heard about this first on Sunday? That's when it occurred?
That is correct. Yes, we did receive a report from our police department that was quick as far as response on the scene. And our DPW crews were immediately out there just to make sure from a public safety standpoint that we made sure that we had temporary fencing up. And now we have even more robust fencing just to keep the public safe while we try to manage and get this back up to snuff.
So how do you fix something like this? I mean, that's not a small hole to fill.
No, it's not even the hole that's the issue here, Michelle. It's more so that we got to figure out the root cause of the issue, and that goes with the manhole 70 feet deep where we have our stormwater outfall basin that goes out to Lake Michigan. So even though the sinkhole is only at 30 feet, the true issue is even further down where we have our connection with that stormwater outfall. So we're talking about a 4.5 foot diameter pipe that takes about 15 to 20% of the stormwater within the village of Whitefish Bay and exits out to Lake Michigan. So it's going to be a very unique project from an emergency standpoint to try to excavate and stabilize all the utilities within the area, including our stormwater. So this will not be a quick fix for the village, but we're meeting daily to try to resolve both temporary ways to make sure that we get that stormwater out of the village as much as long-term stabilization for that area.
Matthew Collins joining us from Whitefish Bay. He is the DPW director here on Wisconsin's Morning News. Matt, one of the things I have to admit, like, and I often think about this because it is popped up in the news from time to time whenever there are these heavy rains or whatnot. I know the east side of Milwaukee has had an issue or two before with something like this. I know in Franklin they're dealing with this right now, right, Michelle? They got something like that.
Yeah, there's one on Putes Road right now that they're working on.
So how do you prevent it? How do you prevent something like this happening, especially when there are systems that are older and very deep underground?
Yeah, that's a great question, and you nailed it as far as the aging infrastructure within Milwaukee County. This is not only a Whitefish Bay issue. This is within the whole entire area, the metro Milwaukee area, where the stormwater utility, some of it was hand-constructed over 90, 100 years ago. So, and when you go down to that depth, it's very hard to do routine maintenance 70 feet deep where you have a lot of these stormwater utility outfalls. So there has to be a process to manage these things, inspect them, and to try to manage so they don't have these emergency situations. But given that a lot of our utility infrastructure is of that age, we do routine maintenance and inspection, but we also have to be conscientious as far as just the age of when these were put in, almost 100 years ago.
Are there things to look out for, like when inspections are being done? Do these crews look for anything specific when they're trying to determine whether or not something is aging or something looks maybe incorrectly? And by no means am I suggesting anyone did anything wrong here. I'm just curious, like what inspections actually look like.
Of course, and we do have camera crews that go and inspect, for instance, like our sanitary lines, and when we do things like that, we look for either things organically like roots that maybe come in and could create a backup per se, or joints that maybe have separated based on ground movement or maybe construction activities in the area that shift pipes or utilities. So anytime that we see any of those anomalies, or even if there's cracks based on the degradation of the concrete, because concrete was not reinforced back in the day like it is now, there's a lot newer technologies that the infrastructure will be able to age differently than what it was back in the day. So some of it was built, you know, very reliable, but still, as these things age, the earth shifts, especially on a bluff that might not be as stable as it was once before. So there's a lot of considerations as far as how things move, shift, and then just the age of that infrastructure that we as a village and DPW have to be conscientious of.
Is this something we can expect to see more of? It just seems kind of scary to think if, you know, I could be walking down the sidewalk and all of a sudden fall into a hole.
Absolutely. And that's why we're extremely thankful that as we go through our emergency response, the most important thing is that no one got hurt in a situation like this. And that's why we're just asking the public to stay away from the area. We have the fencing. There's a lot of beautiful parks within Milwaukee County that people can visit. So as we try to resolve this issue, you're right. The most important thing is that from our standpoint, public safety for this instance, and like you're saying, trying to be as proactive and determining these root causes so we can just make sure that from future looking out, that we're on top of these things as much as humanly possible.
Whitefish Bay Department of Public Works Director Matthew Collins. Hey, before we let you go, how did the winter go for you guys? Was it unique? It was obviously a milder winter. Did that make things easier, or was that trickier because of the temps?
I would say it was an easier winter for us by all means, but I'd say over the last 5 years, it does get tricky for DPW crews at the same time, because now it's not just about the snowfall, but you have more sleet and ice events. And if I had to choose a sleet and ice versus snow, I would choose snow any day.
Yeah.
So it's just more of that thing that we're going to have to be more routine on is the changing weather patterns within southeastern Wisconsin of how we manage those snow and ice events.
Matthew Collins, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, you guys. I appreciate it, too.
Matt Collins, the Whitefish Bay Department of Public Works Director, says it's going to be a little bit as they continue to investigate and repair that sinkhole near Buckley Park and Big Bay Park there in the walking path. 822. Wisconsin's Morning News with Vince Vetrano. Vince is off. Eric Bilstead along with Michelle Richards. So the U.S. government is going to release some new inflation numbers later this week. It's supposed to happen tomorrow. And it is expected to show that the overall consumer prices rose last month by just a fraction, a tick, since October. What's interesting is how Americans are spending their money.
Americans have been changing their buying habits. New figures show consumers are still buying things they really want as they scale back on things that dominated their lives during the pandemic.
Okay, that's ABC's Randon Alley there. So, for example, Americans are scaling back on clothing, furniture, and dining out. But they're still spending on experiences like vacations, concerts, and on luxuries like jewelry. That seems backwards to me. I can't even fathom buying jewelry if I didn't have money to spend on things. Like I'd rather buy clothes than jewelry, right? Am I crazy there?
Oh, for sure. You're crazy, but no. I see what you're saying for sure. And you know, concert tickets are super expensive and vacations are super expensive.
Well, true. So I guess I can see the idea there. That's what I'm surprised at. Why? I mean, any concert you're going to, I mean, we've heard all the Taylor Swift stuff. I mean, hundreds of dollars. Mm-hmm. Furniture, dining out. I mean, it still seems like you see people dining out from time to time. Obviously, I think restaurants would like to have a little bit better revenue coming right in. But yeah, scaling back on the clothes.
And that seems strange to me.
Never would have thought
Nobody
that.
Scales back on clothes.
Never would have thought. But we're buying a lot of necklaces, apparently. It is 8:29. Coming up next half hour, right after the headlines here at the bottom of the hour, you may not like artificial intelligence. You may be getting sick of hearing about AI, but you might be working for AI, or at least being interviewed by AI, sooner than you think. In fact, It may have already happened and you not realize it. That story coming up. On Wisconsin's Morning News. Vince Vetrano off, Eric Bilstead along with Michelle Richards.
Seems like a dream come true, moving to a tropical island somewhere and just living your life while doing your job, right? Well, apparently, after COVID, more Americans are doing just that, choosing to live and work overseas.
Taking off for a faraway land and staying there for an extended time is increasing in popularity. A new study from the site Places to Travel finds Google searches for digital nomad visas have soared more than 1,100% this year. Italy launched its digital nomad visa in April. It requires workers to make over $30,000 a year and show proof of health insurance, accommodation, and remote work elsewhere for at least 6 months. More than 50 countries around the world now offer digital nomad visas. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
So these visas are temporary. They enable someone to live in a specific place, usually for up to a year, sometimes longer. They have to do their job using a laptop and have some internet connection, and they have to work for an employer who is based in their home country or be self-employed. And I know a guy who did this.
Yeah, where did he go?
This was during COVID. He went to the Bahamas, he and his family. He has two kids, I believe two kids, and he and his wife both work remotely, and they just hung out in the Bahamas
that
for a year.
Sounds amazing.
I know, right?
Well, where would you go?
The Bahamas or Italy sounds pretty nice. I don't know. I could see myself kind of country hopping, too. You know, maybe spend a few months in this country and then move along.
I'm thinking maybe I've heard good things about Granada. heard good things about Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Panama. Maybe do that. Maybe
somewhere
live there.
Warm.
Yes, it's got to be someplace warm. Yeah, okay, I can do that. We'll make that a thing.
Okay, once
what's
the kids are out of the house, right?
Ah, who knows? Maybe they come with it. Who knows?
Digital nomad visa.
They can just work remotely too, right?
There you go.
It is 8:41. So speaking of working, I know there's a lot of talk recently about artificial intelligence and about how that might be doing your job someday. Well, what if you are being interviewed by AI to get a job? It's already happening. We explain next.
Go to rejuvenex.com to request your appointment.
I just want to scream hello.
Apple announced on Monday new AI software. Well, now an artificial intelligence cartoon may soon be deciding whether or not you get your next job. Wired has this story. As if trying to land a new gig isn't demoralizing enough, job seekers are meeting with characters powered by AI who are capable of meeting with an infinite candidate number and make it much easier for the company to hire. So here's how this goes. Essentially, the job seeker goes on a Zoom call and they're talking to an artificial intelligence cartoon. It's an interviewer here. You can hear it here.
I have some context on your background based on your LinkedIn. Can you tell me a bit about your experience at WDB at Berkeley?
Yeah, at WDB at Berkeley.
All right, now this is a guy actually answering the question. He's on the Zoom.
My peers at Berkeley, and we mainly worked on React and Node.js as the tech stacks.
Nice.
So yeah, the interviewer there at the end, the AI interviewer saying nice, nice job. And this continues.
Can you explain to me what props are in React?
Yeah, props in React.
So basically, whoever's being interviewed can choose who they speak with. It doesn't have to be the same cartoon version person. It can be different genders and races, names like Benjamin, Leslie, or Kristen you can talk to.
React.
Congrats. We're done with the theoretical programming questions.
Oh, that's nice. I really want my interviewer to congratulate me after I'm done answering a question.
Congrats. You made it through the awkward portion of the interview process.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Nice.
By the way, we should point out, so this sounds ridiculous, right? It sounds unbelievable, but it's already happening in different forms. In fact, Michelle here has gone through an interview process like this.
I did. Before I was granted an in-person interview, I had to put an app on my phone and just basically video record myself responding to these questions that were prompted on the screen. So it wasn't a cartoon that was interviewing me. Just a question popped up on my screen. And then I had X amount of time to answer the question and then proceed to the next.
Nice.
Well, what did it... Were the questions going to be the same no matter what as far as your answers? It wasn't like it was tailoring its questions to you. You were recording them and then you'd submit it.
I mean, if I had to guess, it was probably just a random mix of questions because there was there was some practice rounds before the actual official interview. So, you know, but you're not guaranteed to get the same questions during the practice round as you during the official portion.
What are your salary expectations?
So questions like that, is that what they ask? I mean, or are they all very specific toward the job?
I think they're the generic interview questions. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses?
Tell me about your weaknesses.
Tell me about a time you had a conflict with a coworker.
Okay.
You know, stuff like that, or a problem that you had to solve.
So this is going to happen more and more. The use of AI tools in job hunting is becoming widespread. And what makes this so unique, and it makes sense. It's don't get me wrong. It's awful. It's awful that it's being done this way. But it gives a recruiter or a hunter or just any company the opportunity to interview thousands of people all at once. Like, there's no real time constraint when you go about it this way. The only difference, really, is that you don't have anyone actually responding or reacting specifically to your answer, I don't think. I mean, in this case, it does a little bit.
Nice.
But for the most part, you know, you don't have that, you don't get that sense that a job interviewer would get. Like, they can, he or she can interview you, Michelle, and be like, okay, this seems to work, or I'm not sure if she's right for this position.
Right. Or if you say something interesting, where's the follow-up? You know, is the cartoon character programmed to follow up on something interesting you might have said?
Right. Instead of just moving on to the next one.
Nice. You're doing great.
Well, and then what if the interview is really bad? Because there are a lot of job candidates. Come on, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. A lot of job candidates who either A, are not qualified for the job, or B, are just downright awful.
Right. So this technology, though, I don't think they can outright cut you from the running. I think they categorize you like inexperienced or advanced or, you know, something like that.
Look, I got a 1 o'clock. So why don't we wrap this up?
No, so they won't try to go quicker and move along and get it done.
I mean, if they're truly bad, maybe there is, you know, cues.
Every boss has gone through it. There's been managers that have done the interviews and like they're killing time at the end.
Would you like a tour? Here is the break room. We get free coffee.
I know it's going to bother a lot of people that this is what's happening. But just be prepared for it because it's going to happen even more and more as companies try to find ways to save time and money as they look for the next, you know, next job candidate, job employee, or multiple if they're looking for, you know, where it's a high count of hiring people. They need to go through it quicker.
It's probably going to be seen in other areas of our lives, too. I mean, we're already ordering everything through apps and doing things digitally. We could be interviewing or being interviewed by a cartoon character maybe next time we need the doctor or something just to get those preliminary questions out of the way. Who knows?
We're done with the theoretical programming questions. Congrats. We're done with the theoretical programming questions.
Uh-oh, it's skipping. 851.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
Wisconsin's Morning News, moving into the Political Power Hour with Steve Scafidi. The jurors are back in the deliberating room in Wilmington, Delaware. This is the trial against President Biden's son, Hunter. Prosecutors had argued that Biden, who had been struggling with addiction, lied on a form when he purchased a gun back in 2018. The defense says you'd have no way of knowing that he intentionally lied. ABC's Terry Moran is there.
Jurors listened very closely yesterday when the judge in this case read them the law that they will apply to the facts that they've heard. A key word in that law may be knowingly. Did Hunter Biden knowingly lie on that federal form when he bought that gun? Or did he sincerely believe that he was not abusing drugs at that time because he was trying to get clean?
So we'll continue to monitor that situation in Delaware, and we will continue to monitor the roads. I know it's been a little rough one on the interstate this morning. So obviously all that and more coming up in news at 9 o'clock. It's 8:57. The Political Power Hour with Steve Scafidi is next.